You are welcome here. You may have been here basically every Sunday for the last few decades, and certainly you're welcome today. This may be your one and only time to be here. We're glad for your presence and attendance here today. I am feeling amazingly cavalier this morning, and I want you to know that I'm telling you that as a warning because I could say anything. Kind of the focus of the weekend was Asa and Catherine's wedding yesterday, and that went so well that there's still a lot of joy that came out of that experience. And I know a number of you were supportive in a number of different ways, and certainly that is appreciative. And we wish them the very best. They're a wonderful couple. I've done almost 200 weddings during my time in ministry, and whenever I do a wedding, it causes me to think of other weddings and all of those stories that just get wrapped up in weddings. So I'm going to share a couple of them with you today just because I need to. back in the early 90s, I was in youth ministry for 12 years. And so as those kids grew up, they would ask me to come and do their weddings. And so they were all across the country in a variety of places. But in the early 90s, one of the girls asked me to come and marry she and her fiance. I didn't know the boy at all. And we did the rehearsal on the night before the wedding and got down to the time for the recessional and they were going to walk out to the music and she turned and said, no, don't play the song. The song is a surprise. And I was like, Lori, I really don't do surprises. And she said, you'll like it. It's going to be really good. She made it sound like it was going to be something touching and moving, that would kind of remind us of our past together. The next day, time for the recessional, it's Michael Bolton's Love is a Wonderful Thing. And they literally danced their way out down the aisle of the church building. And I was like, Lori, I will pay you back at some point in time. I did Lori's sister's wedding, Tara, 2 years later over in Tennessee. And Lori was one of these sweet, sweet, sweet young women who fell for a bad boy. And you've seen that happen. The picture wasn't pretty, even from that beginning. But we got over there the first day, and all the ladies were off doing something, and the bride's dad and I were sitting in the lobby of the hotel, and in came the groom. And he says, hey, John, come here. I want you to meet Rob. And so we did this whole deal. And then the father of the bride says, John, Rob and I were just talking about the fact that we didn't get our invitations to the bachelor party. And you could just see John go, what? We were looking forward to it. We'd heard it was going to be a lot of fun. And John's pretty clever. He says, well, the best man plans the bachelor party, and I'd have to get the details from him. And he said, and the father of the bride says, do that, would you? Leave them at the desk for us. And all that day, every time we'd see the groom, he'd say, need those details. After the rehearsal, the groom comes over and he says, about that bachelor party thing. And the father of the bride just reaches over, picks up a piece of paper, has nothing written on it. He's looking at it and says, oh, no problem. I got all the details from the best man. We're right behind you. Yeah. And again, the groom was like, oh, I hope not, Having the preacher and the father of the bride, that would not be the evening that I have in mind. I went to one wedding out of town, and when I met the groom's father, he introduced me to another man, and he said, this is our preacher from back home. We brought him just in case. And I was like, just in case what? In case I have a heart attack and die, or the rehearsal doesn't go well. What's the just in case stuff? In doing all those weddings, I've learned three things. One is if the bride is wearing a veil and she picks up a candle, run. The second one is if the participants sing to each other, go sit down. And the third one is, if there are children on stage during the ceremony, bring handcuffs. And those are the things that... But it is that time of spring fever. And as Elvis Presley would say, love is in the air. And it's a wonderful time of year. It really is. It's that time when graduations happen and we see our young people go forward. And the promise of that is just really encouraging. And as people match up and they marry, and the promise of those unions is exciting as well. And so it's a wonderful time of year. It really is exciting. Now I'm going to switch gears to the church at Corinth. And you're going to think that what I just got through sharing with you has nothing to do with today, but it does. So give me a little bit of room here. Corinth was a messed up church. And if you read through the book of 1 Corinthians, you won't have any trouble coming to that conclusion. Probably if you had moved to Corinth and you visited at Corinth, you wouldn't have placed membership there. You might have even gone to the little pagan church down the street because they are really having all kinds of problems. If they were a church in existence today, I would suspect that other churches would just withdraw from them. They just got all kinds of trouble. Paul writes to them a letter, and he addresses the problems that they're dealing with. And he doesn't say give up. He doesn't say close down. He doesn't say any of those things. But instead, when you look carefully at that letter, the theme is love. And you know, you're thinking probably like some of us do, oh no, not one of those guys. None of those guys that believes that love fixes everything, you know. You just love each other and it'll all be okay. And you want to whisper in their ear, you know, you need to stand up for something. You need to defend something. You need to bring something to the table. This always saying that love is going to fix it can be kind of irksome, to say the least. But Paul's not one of those guys. You're not going to be able to criticize Paul's courage because he shows that he has incredible courage. You could question his approach, though. You're going to say to Paul, is love really going to conquer the division that's here? The intellectualism? The argument over spiritual gifts? The controversies, the immorality, the misunderstandings, the misbehavior at the Lord's Supper. Don't you need to be a little more specific than that? And yet Paul keeps coming back over and over to this idea that love is truly the thing. I'm way behind on the slides. He'll mention several times in this book different things that point back to that. But knowledge puffs up while love builds up. And that's a key verse, because a lot of their problems are based on the fact that they're so puffed up and arrogant and open-minded about things. And he's saying there needs to be a little more practical approach there. 1 Corinthians 13:13, the greatest of these is love. And we've seen that passage over and over again. But the passage I'd like for you to share with you today is at the very end of that book, 1 Corinthians 16:13-14, when Paul issues his summation. He says, okay, folks, let me sum it all up for you. I've told you all these things specifically. Now I want to give you a whole, just an underlying theme that you can hang on to. Be on your guard. Stand firm in the faith. Be courageous. Be strong. Those are four direct, practical things that they can do and things that Paul wants them to do. And then he takes this great big umbrella and places it over the top of those four practical things and says simply, do everything in love. No matter what decision you make, no matter what strategy you adopt, no matter whatever way you're going to approach any kind of particular issue, as he's given them ideas in those in verse 13, you have to do it through love. And because you love, and everything there is wrapped up in love. You see, the people at Corinth were so smart. The people at Corinth viewed themselves with such superiority that they had become competitive. Oh, you have a spiritual gift? Well, I have a better spiritual gift. You have this particular view, then I have another particular view. You like Paul? Well, I like Peter best. And somebody else steps in and says, no, I like Apollos. It's all about me, 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 me. Let's be competitive. I don't know if you've ever been in a competitive church, but we have. We spent 7 years in a church that was very competitive. And I want to tell you this. It was by far and away the most successful church that we've been associated with. We went from 300 to 1,000 in 5 years. And that was because of competition in a lot of ways. And you look at the end result of that and you start to think, well, what was really the right thing there? Go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Paul, in talking about love, says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. What's Paul saying there? The accomplishment doesn't matter if the motive isn't right. There's the right action, but there's also the right motive. And so often we get hung up on, I want to do the right thing. I want to do the right thing. And that's great and it's wonderful and it's necessary and it's needed. Why do you want to do the right thing? Well, because I love the people that I'm trying to minister to. I love the Lord and I love being His instrument. I love serving the kingdom. I want to do those things motivated out of a pure and honest heart. And so it's not just what we do, it's how we feel about it and what motivates us to move in that particular direction. In 85, Huey Lewis, The Power of Love. And I, you know, listened to that song yesterday and sang that song. It sounds kind of like a silly song, and it is in many ways. But if you think about Paul understood the power of love. It wasn't just an add-on. It wasn't just the icing on the cake. It isn't a topping. It's a foundational kind of situation. Ephesians chapter 3, these of course are words from Paul, starting in the last part of verse 17. And I pray that you, well, note the number of times that love is mentioned in this passage. You being rooted and established in love may have power, together with all the Lord's holy people, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ. And to know that love surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Now, we're not talking about an emotion. And sometimes that gets to be a difficulty in talking about love. We're not talking about an affection. We're talking about something that is both part of our heart and part of our behavior. And the measurement of love as it's presented in the New Testament is a measurement of a behavioral thing. I behave as if I love. And surprisingly, when we behave that way, it starts to affect our emotion. And it starts to impact our true affection. And it does have that overpowering kind of situation. All kinds of passages, and I just want to throw a couple up here quickly, that reinforce this idea and challenge us just a little bit. This one's already been up here. It was in the selection that Jason chose this morning. Love covers a multitude of sins. I was in a Bible class one night, and this lady said, if you do an act of love, that pays for 1,000 sins. And I was like, where did that come from? She said, well, it says it in the Bible. We get hung up on that. We think, oh, if I do something good or loving, then maybe not 1,000, but X number of sins gets marked off. That's not what this passage is talking about. The people that you love are easier to love even when they're doing wrong, even when they're making mistakes. We want the best for that person. Somebody you don't really like, they have something negative in their life, it's kind of like, well, they sort of deserved it. People that you really love, it's like, I want to help them through that. I want to do that. And so we're talking again about that basic motive. Love, of course, according to Paul in Romans, has to be sincere. It has to be genuine. It can't be that fakey kind of thing that we sometimes place out there. 1 Thessalonians 3:12. May the Lord make your love increase and overflow for each other and for everyone else, just as ours does for you. Increase to the point that it overflows. Many of you know this, but last week in April, Joyce is not living in her house any longer. She's at Brookdale now. I went over to her house, walked in, and I thought, did somebody put glass down on the kitchen floor? It just looked like there was this sheen. And then I realized that my feet were wet. The washing machine had been flowing over for almost 24 hours. And there's water everywhere. When something overflows, it really overflows. And when I probably won't ever read this passage again, that I won't think about that. You know, when you look at the washing machine, there's not really all that much water coming out at one time. But when it comes out for a long time, it creates incredible problems. And here Paul is saying that I want your love to increase, not till it fills up the tub, but till it overflows, till it floods the kitchen and the dining room and the living room, till it floods over the entire church, so that you really can experience what God is providing. One last one. For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. The only thing that counts, listen to this, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. We don't give love enough credit. We think about it, we talk about it, we refer to it. We're real kind of superficial a lot of times about love that goes beyond the principal relationships we have in our lives. Paul knew that it had power. Paul knew that it had the power to invoke change and sustain change. And if you read 2 Corinthians, surprise, surprise, they've made progress because they listened to what Paul had in mind for them. Weddings are wonderful. And the joy, the love that comes in the springtime is an exciting thing. But you know, there's another kind of love. And it's the love that you could call cemetery love. This is the weekend for Memorial Day. And although this holiday is primarily designed to honor those people who have given their lives in the service, many of you, how many people in here remember decorating the family plot? It was just something that you did, typically this weekend. You went out there and you trimmed the grass and you put the bricks back in place. And you would find other families out there as well, and they were tending the plot. It was a sign of respect, and it was a sign of honor to go and decorate those graves each spring. And some of the people there were those who had served the country and maybe in some situations had lost their lives. But principally, they were just people from our past, and we honored them because of the love that they had extended. Cemetery love is a powerful love. It's a love that sacrifices. It's a love that really shapes who we are and what we are and why we do certain things that we do. And we can look at that spring love and say, wow, what a great thing to have, and it is. But we look at the cemetery love and we see the end of the road. That's when it's all come to fruition, it's all come to pass, and we're left with that knowledge, hopefully, that this was just the beginning. And these people that we miss are the people that are somewhere else because we love them so very much. Love is a powerful force. And today, as you look around, there may be people that you need to change your perspective toward. There may be people that you need to actually have a conversation with. There may be attitudes and behaviors that you need to shift a little bit so that you can actually be motivated by pure love in the way you interact and deal with those folks. If love isn't driving you in strong and proper ways, then please reevaluate where you're going and what you're thinking and what you're doing. This morning, if we could help you in that process, we'd be glad to while we stand and sing this song together.